Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name's BJ, and I'm an alcoholic. For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with a serenity prayer. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. The restrooms are across the foyer and up the more shallow flight of stairs, kind of diagonally if anybody needs them. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. I will now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and to help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. So tonight we are discussing step four, parts B and C. Could you join me in welcoming our panel? We have Nicole and Jason. And just as a refresher, step four is made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. So how this is going to work is I will read the first paragraph, which tonight is on page 67, and then the panel will share for a few minutes each on the reading. So, page 67. Notice that the word fear is bracketed alongside the difficulties with Mr. Brown, Miss Jones, the employer, and the wife. This short word somehow touches about every aspect of our lives. It was an evil and corroding thread. The fabric of our existence was shot through with it. It set in motion trains of circumstances which brought us misfortune we felt we didn't deserve. But did not we ourselves set the ball rolling? Sometimes we think fear ought to be classed with stealing. It seems to cause more trouble. Nicole?
Well, hello, my name is Nicole. I am an alcoholic.
Hey, Nicole.
Am I appropriately distanced from the microphone? I hope. I'm going to lean in a little. So this paragraph and fear... Well, first, I'm an alcoholic, so I like to drink a lot, and I really, really enjoy drinking. And part of the reason that I enjoy drinking so much is that it removes my fear. I am generally an anxious person. I was born anxious, I feel like. I can remember being a little kid and laying in bed at night and being... uncomfortable and with no good reason to feel uncomfortable. I came from a very loving home, but I had this sense of discomfort in my chest a lot, which I've come to realize is fear. And so as an awkward, shy 16-year-old girl who's scared of life and all of you and everyone around me, alcohol was a perfect solution to that. Because when I drank, I felt beautiful and funny and taller, and all of a sudden my skin cleared up and my hair was doing what it was supposed to do, and I didn't care what y'all were doing anymore, and I could have a lot of fun and not have that feeling in my chest. It released that immediately, and it was replaced by a warm glow in my chest. And so by the time I got to this part of the inventory, the very first time, you know, it says the short word somehow touches every aspect of our lives. And I have to tell you that it does. And it did when I was drinking. And I have found that the effects of fear and my reactions to fear have lingered far into sobriety. You know, I've been sober a little while and I'm still afraid and I still have fear. And, you know, if you want me to lie, just put me in a situation where I'm afraid and I will lie before I even know it. And it just naturally happens. If I'm afraid of what you're thinking of me, I might try to act in a way to make you think differently of me. I may tell a story and exaggerate it, or, you know, I may leave something out that might be critical, just so that you won't think less of me. And so I have struggled a lot with fear in my life, and, you know, a lot of people have fancy words for it, anxiety, and different things, but it's really truly just fear, you know. And the truth is that I get afraid, and sometimes in this paragraph anyway, the idea of fear, I'm still afraid about what God's gonna do to me when I read this paragraph, you know. I don't know what he's up to. And so so, you know, that kind of fear can prevent me from completely surrendering, from being willing to do a thorough inventory, and from doing these different things. And so the very first time I did it, it was at the most basic level. And I, you know, I wrote down I was afraid of mice. Because I am, I don't like them, they're creepy. And, you know, they make that noise, and I don't like that. And so I wrote about mice, and I wrote about my parents, you know, dying and maybe getting cancer. And, you know, I wrote down some pretty, you know, basic fears. And as I have continued to stay sober, I've begun to see how many more, much more pervasive and subtle fears that I really have. And I may talk about that a little bit more later. But for now, I think I can tell you that fear has caused me a lot of trouble in my life. I can definitely concur with that part of the book. And that in this process, this gave me a way to identify them. Because a lot of times when I'm angry at someone, underneath that is some kind of fear. Or if I'm acting in a certain way that's not good, there's a fear or something. And sometimes I will do whatever I can. You know, earlier in the book when it says we try to blot out of our consciousness our intolerable situation, sometimes that's just what's going on in my head. And all of this stuff going on in my head. And 90% of that, it seems, is based in fear. And so when I am afraid to do something, so I stay home and eat cookies and watch Netflix streaming videos all day and don't leave my apartment, and I can't pick up the phone and I'm paralyzed, that is also fear. And although the trouble that it causes me today isn't always like big, you know, like my life isn't set on fire, there there's trouble, and it does cause me trouble. So, and I was able to identify a few of those things by writing them down, which it doesn't say to do in this paragraph, but that's what the directions say. We write them down and then ask ourselves why we have them. So, anyway, that's it. Thanks.
All right, I'm Jason. I'm an alcoholic.
Jason.
I have a sobriety date. It's May 11, 2017. I also have a sponsor who has a sponsor who I talk to every single day. And I have a home group. It's Uptown Young and Sober. Meets on Wednesday nights in Virginia Beach. The best Young and Sober meeting in the area, by the way. But fear is what I'm here to talk about tonight. And I'm really bummed out that it is not clowns and snakes, because I was all prepared to talk about clowns and snakes when I did my fourth step, because that's really easy, because it scares the heck out of me. And it really has nothing to do with me. I just think clowns and snakes are extremely creepy. Unfortunately, my sponsor let me know it's not really about clowns and snakes. That's not the kind of fear that you're facing. It's fear of self. And I thought, oh crap, we got to get deep. So just like Nicole said, I mean, I was always growing up the socially awkward one, really hard to talk to new people, especially the girls, couldn't do it, didn't like doing it. And it made me that kind of that social outcast until the night that I found alcohol at 18 years old. And oh my gosh, I could talk to the girls, I could go make friends, I could be the me that I am around people that I already know. Alcohol allowed me to, you know, to be me, to be relaxed, to get rid of all of this stuff. And I never thought that was fear. It was just, you know, like Nicole just said, a little bit of anxiety. Growing up in my teenage years, I always, you know, was in psychologist's office or psychiatrist, whatever they're called. For depression and anxiety issues. And then alcohol arrived and that depression and anxiety went away, because I was this new person. I was me. That fear stayed with me, because as I grew, as I guess my cockiness grew, because I'm drinking, I'm feeling so good about myself with all this alcohol, that once I started to get jobs and employed and out of college, I'd go home and I'd be like, it would just, my day would just constantly replay in my head of what did I mess up on? Because I couldn't let anybody know that I wasn't as perfect as I thought I was. And what happens if a customer calls and complains about something that I did because I'm not perfect? The only way to calm that down was to drink more and to drink more. Somewhere along the line, I had managed to find the girl and get married. And that comes a lot of responsibilities as a man. You know, I felt I needed to protect, I needed to provide, I needed to do all these things, and what happens if? And that kind of fear just, it stuck with me day in and day out. And the only way, like I said, to get rid of that fear was to drink and to drink more and to drink more. Going through this, I never would have called it fear. Because I wasn't afraid of anything. I was that big man that needed to be proud of himself and to show all this pride and to show you who I thought you wanted to see and to show my wife what I thought that she needed to see. But I would, every time the phone rang, I would be terrified, because I knew it was work calling, it was, oh gosh, a creditor calling, because as I continued to try to provide, the more I drank and the more my life became unmanageable, the less money I had, the more those creditors kept calling and calling. And I knew I lived in a constant state of fear. It got to the point that the fear took on a different role. And instead of being the social person that I wanted to be, well, now I was also afraid that if I went out and drank in public, you'd think I'm an alcoholic. And I can't let anybody know that maybe I'm an alcoholic. So instead of being around all my friends who, maybe some of them are alcoholics as well, but a lot of them are just hard drinkers, I would find any reason not to go out, any reason not to leave the house, since I'm perfectly happy here, sitting here watching TV and drinking myself into a blackout every night. Because I'm such a proud person, I just can't let that happen. So I think that's all I got, right?
Thank y'all. Our next reading is on page 68. Perhaps there is a better way, we think so, for we are now on a different basis, the basis of trusting and relying upon God. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. We are in the world to play the role He assigns. Just to the extent that we do as we think He would have us and humbly rely on Him, does He enable us to match calamity with serenity. We never apologize to anyone for depending upon our Creator. We can laugh at those who think spirituality the way of weakness. Paradoxically, it is the way of strength. The verdict of the ages is that faith means courage. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. We never apologize for God. Instead, we let Him demonstrate through us what He can do. We ask Him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what He would have us be. At once, we commence to outgrow fear.
Well, it's me again. So that is really beautiful. You know, really, really beautiful. And difficult in practice, but beautiful to read. But there are also some more specific instructions in there. Very, you know, simply to ask for certain things. And I'm just going to tell a little story about, I'm going to borrow this. So I'm going to tell a little story about some of, sometimes when I've been through fear. You know, I go through fear a lot. But then there's also those general kind of things that even normal people are afraid of. And so the difference between normal people, I heard somebody describe this one time and it made perfect sense to me. And it was about how, like, when you're a teenager, and I'm going to use my name, first person, I see a cute boy and I want to talk to him, and I go over there and he doesn't want to talk to me, and I leave and I'm sad, and I'm just sad. And somebody says, oh, well, you'll get through it. You're just a youngster. You know, you'll get through it. And the thing with alcoholics is we don't get through it. We just file it away and hold on to it until whatever fear we had at that moment turns into terror later on in life. And so if you can imagine every fear that I've ever had my entire life until I get to Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, when it talks about the four horsemen later, you know, terror, bewilderment, frustration, despair, that terror I felt, I believe for me, is a result of having all those fears build up and build up and build up in like a pressure cooker. And then booze releases the pressure, and then I'm come to Alcoholics Anonymous and y'all are telling me, we'll pray. And I think, well, that doesn't sound like it's going to work very good. That doesn't sound like it's going to work at all. And so I have to make these halting, you know, attempts at prayer. And so one of the things that it says to do is to let God demonstrate through us what He can do. Well, if I'm all jacked up, I can't do that. You know, I like to have walls between me and you and me and God and me and everybody. And so when I'm building the wall and God's trying to say, Nicole, I want you to demonstrate what, you know, what I can do. Oh my God, it's nice music. And and so I'm, you know, saying, let me demonstrate. And so one of the places that I tried this one time, and it was one of the most amazing things, I'll tell this story really quick, is I had a job interview, and you know, it's a normal thing people get anxious about, totally normal, you know. So I'm all jacked up and nervous, and I go in, and before I go, I sit in the car, and I read this, and I read these two paragraphs, and I say, okay, God, if this is what it is, then, you know, please let me demonstrate what you can do. And that is what I use as the prayer. And then it says, please direct my attention to what you would have me be, and or what you would have us be. And so being and doing are two very different things. And so I spend a whole lot of time going, God, what do you want me to do? 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 And he's saying, I want you to be. This is what I want you to be. You know, I want you to be Nicole. That was the first thing I heard. And I thought, holy moly, nobody wants to be me. Why would you want that? And then it was, why don't you try being kind? Or be patient. Be loving. You know, those are being words and not all doing words. I mean, we do practice patience, but being patient is different. And the practice of being, I'll just say one more thing about that really quickly, is that there are some people that I have encountered that have this tremendous ability to just be. Mm-hmm. And the most beautiful thing that they do is give me the ability to just be. And so I have some friends that, even though I'm not always easy to get along with, and even though I'm difficult, and even though I'm having a bad day, or I'm filled with self-pity, or I'm feeling sorry for myself, or whatever, they just let me be. And they sit with me, and they walk through it with me. And that is kind of a really good benchmark for me about people that I kind of want to be around. And one of them is not in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was around them last week, and I had a really kind of a difficult day, and I was feeling sorry for myself, and you know, I realized, I was like, oh my God, like I'm a litterer, I do things wrong all the time. I you know, she's walking around the beach picking up litter and I'm flicking my cigarette butts. And I said, oh my God, I realized I shouldn't have done that. And she said, that's okay. And she just let me be me. And I think that's a really beautiful thing to try to try to do, right? Haha, isn't that funny? Here I am trying to say do a be instead of just being. And that's where my mind goes all the time when God just wants me to be me. So that's it.
Still Jason, still an alcoholic. This paragraph, I mean, this couple of paragraphs, is really just for me about trusting the process, trusting God that, all right, I wrote down this stuff. While it was tough to digest when I saw it on paper, but now I just have to trust that, hey, there's a way to outgrow this fear. The sentence in it that says, you know, we used to think spirituality was a way of weakness. Well, that's exactly what I thought. Growing up, it was definitely like, oh, you believe in this, you know, mythical being or this mythical force, whatever it is. Like, okay, you should man up and just do it yourself. And I went through life like that for a long time. But paradoxically, it's a way of strength. I'm able to do now things that I've never been able to do before. I mentioned that, you know, just talking to new people and being in a large group and speaking in front of that large group, I would never be able to have done that before. I would have been so, I guess, terrified, fearful, right? That's what we're here to talk about. Fearful that would have held me back. But more so going up to a complete stranger and asking that complete stranger to give me some time in the social setting or any kind of in a professional setting. So my quick story is I'm trying to build a business, and part of that business I'm going out promoting it, and I'm walking up to complete strangers asking them to give me 30 seconds of their time and just go out and tell them a little bit and pass out business cards to complete strangers. I'm still fearful of this going up, because what if I get rejected? This is still part of it. But I'm able to say a prayer. I'm able to go out and do these things now. Talking to the girls, you know, asking somebody to go on a walk with me to the on the boardwalk is gosh, I don't think I've ever asked out a female drunk until after this. I'm sorry, I never asked out a female sober, not being drunk. I just messed that up, but that's okay. I never asked out a female without being drunk before. I was just too afraid to do it. But my ultimate trust in God and trust in the process that, you know what, let's rely on you and let's see what you can do, you know, put me in this situation. And match calamity with serenity, because that was the definition of calamity, right? A mess. And now to be able to match that with a peaceful situation that I can get over fear is a really powerful thing for me. Letting him demonstrate through me what he can do is this right here, as I'm still nervous to be talking about this right now. Getting out there and sending a message of, you know what, trust me and you can do this is a really good way to go through life instead of, gosh, I can't do that, I'm just gonna avoid the situation, avoid doing it. You know, and once we commence to outgrow fear, this is, every time I get up here and speak, it's outgrowing that fear. It's a little bit easier every time I do it. It's a little bit easier. Every newcomer I talk to in this room, or every situation, the job interviews without being so nervous, just social settings, I don't feel completely out of place and completely uncomfortable like I used to do and like I did before I, you know, I took the 12 steps. That's all I got. Thank you.
Thank you. Moving on to staying on page 68, excuse me. Now about sex. Many of us needed an overhauling there. But above all, we tried to be sensible on this question. It's so easy to get way off the track. Here we find human opinions running to extremes, absurd extremes perhaps. One set of voices cry that sex is a lust of our lower nature, a base necessity of procreation. Then we have the voices who cry for sex and more sex, who bewail the institution of marriage, who think that most of the troubles of the race are traceable to sex causes. They think we do not have enough of it or that it isn't the right kind. They see its significance everywhere. One school would allow man no flavor for his fare, and the other would have us all on a straight pepper diet. We want to stay out of this controversy. We do not want to be the arbiter of anyone's sex conduct. We all have sex problems. We'd hardly be human if we didn't. What can we do about them?
Nicole Alcoholic here, and I was really hoping Jason would talk about fear for about 30 minutes so we could just fast forward to this part. When David asked me to do this, I think he said, you can think about it, and I think it was because of this, you know. And I think a lot of times, I'm going to talk about some of my sex inventory. My very first sex inventory, I think I just wrote, like, sex at the top of a page and shame and guilt and, like, I did a lot of bad things. And it was like a writing it, you know, just write that 100 times, like some sort of school assignment or something, right? So, and in my very first inventory, I didn't really touch on it. And then what had happened was I went on a trip with my sponsor, and we went to the western part of the state up in the mountains, and I had had this feeling that I needed to write a sex inventory, and so I was going to talk to her about it. So we drive. Okay, so we're going to Madison, Virginia. It's about 2.5-3 hours away. So we're driving to Madison, Virginia, whole way there. Gotta talk to her about this sex inventory. Gotta talk to her. Gotta do it. So you get there. She talks. We go have dinner at a very nice Italian restaurant on 29. Driving back. Get all the way through Richmond. We get somewhere down around, I don't know, Williamsburg. And I kind of mutter, like, I think I need to write a sex inventory. And she was like, what? And I said, I think I need to write a sex inventory. I think I'm ready to do it. And she said, okay. And I said, okay. And so I wrote down my sex inventory. And this isn't, I don't know which pair. Well, and so I wrote, so what I did was approach it from a very technical standpoint. of anyone that I had actually physically had sex with. And I thought that that's what this was about. And I found out that that's not what this is about by doing that. But I garnered some valuable information during that process. And I asked her some embarrassing questions on the way back. Like, what if I don't remember their name? And she said, just write a location. I said, okay. and she took something that I was afraid of and a little in shame and dis-ease about and turned it into something that was a little bit easier to handle. And part of that was because, like it says, there's a lot of controversy about this topic. You know, there are people that have a lot of ideas about it. I'm sure if we polled everyone in the room, we'd all have different numbers, we'd all have different ideas, we'd all have different, pastimes, favorites, whatever. And so it's really easy sometimes to get wrapped up in the circumstances surrounding those things or some of the technicalities. More than the real, the part about the spirituality that's underneath it. And so after, in the process of writing that first inventory, I wrote a lot of stuff down, and then I shared that with her, and nothing really changed. And in the process of reading it to her, like, she left, and then a couple days later, I talked to somebody who I really admire, and he said, why don't you write down the people, write inventory about all the people that you flirted with, too, that you didn't actually, technically, score. And I said, okay. and I started to write that down, and that's when things began to shift for me, because I began to see that this isn't about the technical thing, that it's really about how I treat people. And so in the part up here where it says, like, we think we don't have enough of it or it isn't the right kind, if you put attention in there for it, we don't think we have enough attention or it isn't the right kind, that's me. I have at various times had all kinds of different things, but what was important was for me to realize that I'm not very nice to people, or kind is a better word. And the one of the things that came out of that was that I used people a lot, and so if you paid a little attention to me, which it says I don't get enough of that, and it may not be the right kind, then I may not be nice to you in return. And that manifested itself in different ways that I'll talk to people about individually for sure, if they'd like. But, I began to see just how much I am a user of people, this person who didn't think that she was that way, and I didn't see myself like that. And so when that was pointed out to me, it was a revelation. And after that second part of my first sex inventory, the lights began to come on a little bit with regard to how I treat people and the things that I was doing in relationships. And I'm gonna stop with it.
All right. Can everybody hear me now? I'm told I'm too far away. Okay, so sex. Many of us needed an overhauling there. Yes, I did. While I was extremely nervous to talk to the girls sober, when I was drunk, it turns out I was very good at it. And was also very manipulative. I've been in sales for quite a long time and learned how to say the right things and do the right things to get you feeling the right way and so that I could get exactly what I wanted. But that was exactly what it was, just exactly what I wanted. And once I got that, dust my hands off and let's move on. It wasn't about anything else. Not the right kind, not enough, too much. Now I'm bored, so yeah, well, while we may have a good relationship, I'm kind of bored because I'm not getting the right kind, or I'm not, wow. You know, I'd run through women like it was nothing, and yeah, I'm kind of a little bit funny looking, so it's hard to believe sometimes. But oh gosh, I'm way off track here tonight. When it came to my sex inventory, a lot of that, I mean, is kind of strictly between me and my higher power. And it's been said to my sponsor. However, all I'll say is just like what Nicole said, I was not a very nice person to a lot of people. I made you feel one way when, in all reality, I just heard my voice change, so that's weird. In all reality, I was completely thinking of a different thing. Completely had a different set of motives than anything that I was trying to get you to do. Because all I was trying to get you to do is to go to bed, do what I wanted, and move on. That's all I got.
Moving on to page 69. We reviewed our own conduct over the years past. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, or inconsiderate? Whom had we hurt? Did we unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? Where were we at fault? What should we have done instead? We got this all down on paper and looked at it. In this way, we tried to shape a sane and sound ideal for future sex life. We subjected each relation to this test. Was it selfish or not? We asked God to mold our ideals and help us to live up to them. We remembered always that our sex powers were God-given and therefore good, neither to be used lightly or selfishly, nor to be despised and loathed.
So I was laughing when she was reading that because in one of my inventories, this is funny to me. So it says, what should we have done instead? Like you should do something different. Then that's what instead implies. And every time I wrote it down, I wrote, what could we have done better? Like I wanted to like be in some sort of self-improvement class and not instead. And so, you know, and during, this is kind of the nuts and bolts here. So I wrote down the names, you know, I wrote down where I'd been selfish, dishonest, inconsiderate, you know. That's how I operate, you know. That is how I do, you know, that's me. And you know, I'd love to tell you that I did all of that while I was drinking and then I stopped drinking and suddenly I became an angelic giving, kind person in every aspect of my life, but I have been sober a lot longer than I drink, and I have continued to struggle with sex conduct at times, and I'm just going to tell you that there is this is an area where it's really easy to get spiritually sick. Because it is so easy to harm other people. And that is what my own experience has shown me. And, you know, so looking back over that and reviewing my conduct, I have to ask myself, am I being selfish? And sometimes I don't want to ask, you know. And sometimes I ask after, like, oh, it says we subjected, was it selfish or not? And sometimes I do that after, you know. And so I have to kind of ask myself what my motives are. And this is a place where it talks a little bit later, I think, something about our motives. And this is another area where it's really easy for me to let my motives get out of whack, too. So I can take a really bad motive and get out some silver polish and shine it up real pretty and put a little bow on it and make it look good so that when I give it to you, it sounds like a good idea. And later, I get to deal with the consequences of that, which it talks about in the next paragraph she's going to read. But this is just an area that's sober. It's really easy also to get way off track, at least for me. I'm sure all of y'all are totally fine. but, you know, and the other thing is that it's hard for me to remember, kind of as a cautionary tale, is that it says that we all have sex troubles. This is a human problem, you know. Everyone has sex problems. It said that in the first part that she read. The difference is, if I start having sex problems, and I'm not being honest, and I'm doing things that are going to harm people, I'm sure to drink again. And it says that too. And for me to drink is to die. So I need to be really cautious and aware and present about what my motives are and what I'm really looking at and what I'm really doing, because the consequences for me are a little bit different than a regular person who has a few sex issues. And so that's all I have to say about that.
You know, this says, where had we been selfish, dishonest, or inconsiderate? I had to ask myself a different question. It said, where had I not been selfish, dishonest, or inconsiderate? And then I could just pile everything else to, I was selfish, dishonest, or inconsiderate. Talking about my now ex-wife, selfish. My ex-wife enjoyed sex, and she wanted her husband to come up to bed at night when he was at a sober enough part that all parts of his body still worked. And I was so selfish, the beer and the alcohol made that not possible. Inconsiderate, just about every single woman I'd ever slept with. And dishonest, gosh, the stories I had told to get anybody even to that point. I'd go out of my way, though, to make anybody that was interested in me jealous and make sure they knew, like, hey, you know, you're not the only one right now that maybe wants some. just keep that in mind because, well, I may ask for something. Remember that the right kind part earlier? I may ask for something later. There's somebody else. But it's extremely selfish because I was there for nobody but me. And once that happened, well, then it didn't really matter whether you enjoyed your experience or not. Probably the most dishonest thing, I'm gonna share this story, was I was away on business and I was in a bar drinking alone, and I convinced this woman that, you know, my wife left me and I had two kids and I was a single dad and this, that, and the other, and went on that whole story. My wife hadn't left me. The two kids I was talking about were my stepkids, which were hers from a previous relationship. And I convinced her that I was working my butt off and was this, again, completely different person than what I was, and convinced her to pay my bills for about 3 months. And then the only explaining I ever had to do was to tell my wife how our bills were being paid for 3 months. Until she finally wanted to stop doing that, until I committed more, and I was like, again, dust my hands and we're done. Good golly. This is just, where were we at fault? I was at fault all the time. Because I had a lot of really good girls who really liked me and who really wanted to be in the relationship with me and have me give them what they were giving me. And I wouldn't allow it. Because once I got it, I was instantly bored of it. And I wanted something else. I always wanted what I couldn't have. So I'd go out and get what I couldn't have. And then when the time was right, let you know that, hey, I'm getting what I actually want someplace else. And that person's doing for me what you're not. But as I look back at it, the truth is that that person was always doing what she needed to do. I mean, not what she needed to do, that sounds really bad, but what I wanted. She was always willing to do that, and it was just not right for me. So as it's not right for me and I want you, I'd go to you, and then I'd go to you, and then I'd go to you. And never really had a good, solid relationship where I wasn't with X amount of other people during those times. And that's all.
Thank you. Say on page 69, whatever our ideal turns out to be, we must be willing to grow toward it. We must be willing to make amends where we have done harm, provided that we do not bring about still more harm in so doing. In other words, we treat sex as we would any other problem. In meditation, we ask God what we should do about each specific matter. The right answer will come if we want it. God alone can judge our sex situation. Counsel with persons is often desirable, but we let God be the final judge. We realize that some people are as fanatical about sex as others are loose. We avoid hysterical thinking or advice.
So, what is my sex ideal? It's varied at different times in my sobriety. I could tell you that at the beginning, I had a list of what the ideal traits that my partner would have would be. And then somebody said, no, this is about what you're bringing to the party, Nicole, not what they're bringing. And I thought, oh, okay, what am I going to bring? And I can tell you that at various times I have not spent as much time in, contemplation about this as I probably should. Because like I said before, it is powerful and people can get hurt. One of the things is it says that we must be willing to make amends provided we do not bring about still more harm in doing so. That can be a little bit difficult. And sometimes the amends or the thing that needs to be done is to just stay away from that person. Just leave that person alone. And, what could we have done instead? A lot of the time it was leave that person alone. And, like it says in here, we avoid hysterical thinking, we talk to other people, and I have had really good sponsors in Alcoholics Anonymous that have been willing to listen to me talk about these things that, you don't usually talk about in an open forum and get down into the weeds with me about what I'm really doing. And I have to tell you, when the fear part came up, fear will drive you to do some crazy sex stuff too. So, it's all interrelated. And so, that's something else that I really need to be mindful of, there's a lot of, I don't know that, it, yeah, it's a, well, it says it in the last part, but, this is an area of life where it's a good idea for me to pause, because of the kind of consequences that can come about from not pausing. And that can be something, somebody else very wise told me that in my sex conduct, I needed to make sure that I didn't cause any spiritual harm to the other person or to myself. And as much as this is about how I treat other people, I have also created spiritual harm for myself and my conduct. And so I can give some more specific examples of that offline, but this is an area where it's just really easy to get wrapped up in things that may not even be true, because sex is powerful. And it says our sex powers were given by God and were therefore good. So there's power in that. And just like he was saying, he used to do things to convince women to pay his bill. So I bet a lot of women in the room like me know what to do to get y'all to do what I want you to do. And it just depends on what price I'm willing to pay to get what I want. And there is a price that has to be paid. And so, and there's been some other things with that too that I can't really discuss here, but I can tell you that this has been a complicated part of both my drinking. Actually, it was easier when I was drinking because I didn't care. But now that I'm sober, this has become a much more complicated thing for me, and a place that has caused me and other people harm. And that's it.
Whatever our ideal turns out to be, pretty much my ideal, to be honest, is exactly what I wasn't before. As I've gone through and made some of my sex amends, the ones that I can, as it says, not to go back into people's lives that would cause more harm. You know, like Nicole said earlier, you know, I don't remember half of the women's names, because maybe it was one time, maybe it was a few times, but good golly, I was a blackout drinker. But whatever our deal turns out to be, you know what? There's a part in the ninth step promises that says we'll lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. That's what my ideal is right now. When I have sex, not to make it, you know, just about Jason. That there's probably more better things than making it. Yeah, okay, I'm done. Back to whatever I was doing now. That having that connection with somebody else is a whole lot better than any kind of sex that I was having while drunk. You know, God alone can judge our sex situation, and like I said, a lot of my sex inventory is between me and my higher power because of that. So now I just try to avoid the hysterical thinking and advice on my sex life and other situations, knowing that I've done everything that I can in my power to make amends with the people that I've hurt, the people that I disrespected, the people that I flat out can lied to, and moving towards this new ideal of caring about it not just being about Jason, because like I said, that Jason's not the most important person in the room. You're there too, and it should probably be as good for you as it is for me, which really makes the whole situation a whole lot better. I wasn't able to make a whole lot of the amends, like I said, but the ones that I did, my wife was a powerful thing, was a really good, like, just a, okay, I can move on, because she needed to know, and she never knew that alcohol was more important in my life at that time than she was, or our sex life or anything else, that it was just about alcohol. As I made my amends, it was good to let her know that, you know what, you just keep doing what you're doing and you're going to make a lot of other people happy. Well, hopefully not a lot of other people, just she finds the right person. But whatever. You know, just knowing that, it let me know that she's able to grow and that she doesn't feel like, oh wow, I'm not good enough, because I was able to make these amends and put it all on me. That's all I've got.
Thank you guys. It's about all the time we have for sharing tonight. I'm gonna read the last paragraph, which is on page 70. To sum up about sex. We earnestly pray for the right ideal, for guidance in each questionable situation, for sanity, and for the strength to do the right thing. If sex is very troublesome, we throw ourselves the harder into helping others. We think of their needs and work for them. This takes us out of ourselves. It quiets the imperious urge when to yield would mean heartache. In this book, you read again and again that faith did for us what we could not do for ourselves. We hope you are convinced now that God can remove whatever self-will has blocked you off from Him. If you have already made a decision and an inventory of your grosser handicaps, you have made a good beginning. That being so, you have swallowed and digested some big chunks of truth about yourself. We're now going to pass the seventh tradition basket. The seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Although the amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world, we may want to remember that a dollar does not support as many services as it used to. At this time, are there any AA-related announcements? Robert?
Hello, I'm Robert. I'm an alcoholic.
Robert.
I'll remind you that the end of October, the Virginia State Conference of Young People at AA will be held in Virginia Beach, at the north end of the beach. That's at the tourist season. It'll be a great opportunity for events, panels, speakers, and it's a lovely setting as well. If you have any questions, you can go to the website, which is VSCYPAA 2018. There's information there, or I'll be around after the meeting if you have any questions. Glad to answer them for you.
Thanks, Robert. Steph.
My name is Stephanie. I'm an alcoholic. Yes. Less than 2 weeks, Wakefield Campfire Conference is happening. It's on Wakefield. $70 pays for your meal and camping. Our rent's going to be cooking. We have phenomenal speakers. We have workshops, bar, bring your instruments. It's just great fellowship. You can go to Wakefield.
Thanks, Steph. Anybody else?
I'm an alcoholic named Sharon.
Hey, Sharon.
Tomorrow night, Big Book in Ghent presents a fall speaker event. It's going to be a potluck at 5:30 and a speaker at 6. It's at St. Luke's Episcopal Church, and the speaker is going to be Beth H. from Cary, North Carolina. And my understanding is Beth wrote a story in the Big Book.
Thanks, Sharon. Any other announcements? Alrighty. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, raise your hands. Thanks. Newcomers, is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you.
Devin, alcoholic.
Devin, yeah. Welcome.
Matt, alcoholic.
Awesome. We do have literature available on this table over here. Please see myself or any home group member after a meeting if you'd like to buy a book. Sponsorship question. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I will be available at this table after we close the meeting. Please feel free to come talk to me. Some reminders. Smokers, please use the butt can provided outside and stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. In closing, can you guys join me in thanking our panel? Thanks to to all who participated. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on step 4 at the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at Plaza del Sol on Colonial and 22nd Street. Could I have a volunteer to read the last two paragraphs on 164? Jackie?
My name is Jackie. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you. Jackie. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't thought. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thanks, Brady. We'll now close with the Lord's Prayer.
Come on, brother.
Deliver us from evil. Thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever.